supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Support for Voices in the Family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. Well, as most of you know, the unemployment rate has hit nearly 10%, and we don't know if we've hit bottom or not. For those people who still have jobs, the fear of losing them can make everyday life stressful and frightening, from worrying about whether you're the next to go to avoiding risks at work. It's even harder, though, for the 10% who are now looking for jobs. Besides loss of income, the unemployed are at higher risk of facing depression, self-doubt, and as it goes on, hopelessness and helplessness. So what can we do to keep our spirits up when the threat of unemployment is in the air? How can we feel more secure about ourselves even when the job market is struggling? Well, we're going to bring up these questions and so many more. My guests on today's show are Villanova University's Ron Hill and University of Pennsylvania's Paul Rush. Ron Hill's a senior associate dean and professor at the Villanova University School of Business. Paul Rush is director of marketing, contracts, and business development at the Penn Behavioral Health Corporate Services. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So, Ron, let me start with you. Wondering about these new graduates. I wonder what the job market looks like for them. Does it affect their perspective, their motivation, the way they think about work?
Well, at the Villanova School of Business, our number one major is finance. And so we were sending just legions of young men and women to Wall Street, and that's shifted a lot. The firms that gobbled up our kids 2 years ago are now really reticent to hire at all, and if they do, they're hiring many fewer. So I'd say in certain areas we're seeing a real change, and a change causes them to start focusing on other opportunities. Instead of going to Wall Street, they're looking at corporate finance and other kinds of financial jobs. I was looking at the numbers between last year and this year, and in every category in which we graduate, it's down by at least 10%. But our president's called on our alumni to think carefully about trying to hire our students when they come out, and so we're seeing a slight rebound this year.
So those are the facts. I'm wondering about the kids. What's their attitude about work? Is there more anxiety, less motivation? Are they rethinking what they want to do? Are they going home? Are they going to graduate school?
Well, those are all good questions. Let me give you a couple of different answers. One, they are anxious. You can see it on their faces. I'm teaching graduating seniors now this semester in the marketing program, and virtually all of them are wondering whether they're going to have a job when they graduate. The top students, the top 5 and 10%, pretty much always get picked up by somebody. But it's those students more towards the middle that are worried about this. And so I see more anxiety this year than I've seen any other year before. I would say that some of them are doing the traditional thing, which is, well, maybe I ought to stay in school and look at graduate schools. But in a business program, typically you want them to have a year or two experience before they go on and do an MBA. So it's a little bit trickier for them. We are seeing a movement to some of them looking at non-traditional jobs in non-traditional places. So instead of going to New York City, for example, they're looking to Washington, D.C., where we're going to be doing regulation of the financial industry. Maybe they can find an entry-level position down there.
Interesting. And that's a market that looks like it's going to be growing. I forgot to give the phone numbers out. It's 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. We're talking about unemployment, difficulties with employment, the impact for those unemployed, and the impact of for employers who are in the process of laying people off and trying to survive. Paul, let me turn to you. When I was a young man, first employed in the late 60s, early 70s, your life expectancy on a job was as long as you wanted it. I mean, the attitude was if you got a job and it was on career track, you'd stay there for forever. What's the life expectancy now?
Most people, they say, have at least 3 to 4 careers within a very short span of time.
Careers,
where they move from one career to another, shifting within the same realm. In other words, the same area of expertise, but really developing themselves and honing their skills to become higher and higher level in different organizations. So when we say careers, it may not be at all the same career that they originally entered into, and they've really progressed or they've pushed themselves to become more marketable in a wider variety of markets.
I'm curious. That's the fact of most people's lives. And let me turn back to you, Ron, for these college graduates. Are they expecting that? Or are they expecting the same thing we all expected when we graduated college?
Again, it's a very good question. I don't think this generation ever went into college and into the workforce thinking they were going to stay there for very long. In fact, the sense of loyalty that we had to corporations, they broke that pact a long time ago. So this whole generation doesn't see it. They've watched their parents try that, and they've seen what's happened to many of them. Some of them getting laid off in their 50s, some of them getting laid off 5 years before they're fully vested in the organization. They don't have it. They tend to chase skills. But one of the things that I think is happening as an alternative, too, is some of these kids are looking at service opportunities. And I think if the federal government and state governments and nonprofit organizations and NGOs started to look at this generation this year and see all the talent that's out there that can't find a good job, they may be able to marry themselves into something else, because, once again, it's a new skill. It says, I didn't just set out and tend bar because I couldn't get a good job. I found something to help move me forward.
Hmm. There's you mentioned 50-year-olds who were getting laid off before they were vested. There's always been age discrimination. It seems so much worse today as workplaces do seem to be getting younger. Right now, we're going to hear from some middle-aged people who are currently unemployed. Our producer, Stephanie Maruta, stopped by the Career Wardrobe and the Philadelphia Unemployment Project. These are two long-term organizations in Philadelphia that provide job training and assistance for the unemployed. Let's listen.
I had worked in the nursing home as a certified nursing assistant for 15 years. And one day they just let me go. And that's how I became unemployed.
How long have you been unemployed?
14 months. So I did get my unemployment, and I did get to go to school. Right now, I'm doing computers, which I didn't know anything about computers, so now I'm computer literate, but I still can't get an administrative assistant job. So I think it has a lot to do with my age.
That must be very difficult.
It's very, very hard. All my savings, I had spent it on my medication, which was very costly. Because I'm a diabetic, that's a problem.
You know, I'm 50. I'm getting ready to turn 51. And so my kids are grown, and I have 4 grandchildren. And at this point in my life, I'm doing something to make me happy. Like, I want to go to a job that I like, so maybe I could skip, hop, and jump and smile while I'm going to work, you know. And I don't want to feel like I'm dragging myself to work and I'm just going to work because I need to keep a roof over my head like I did all the years raising my kids. So that's what I'm doing now. Now I'm doing me, and I'm just going slow doing it. I'm taking my time. But I'm less stressful. I have less money, but I'm less stressful at the same time. When I was making all that good money, there was stress involved. I see a lot of friends my age that I went to school with that really pursued, and they're doing their thing. And I even know some that are getting ready to retire. And here I am. I feel like I'm just getting a second life part two. So that's when I get depressed. But then I have to pat myself on the back and say, okay, cheer up, because how many people your age get to do this?
When I say unemployed, I do a lot of odds and end jobs, but what I'm actually looking for is something what we call above the table. You know, your regular paycheck, 9 to 5, putting in taxes, that kind of thing. but it's not consistent, you know, with what I'd like. And right now the market is an employer's choice. You know, they can pick and choose. I'm going head-to-head with college grads, people with degrees, you know.
What helps you kind of get by day-to-day?
Knowing that some lucky employer will have me as an employee, you know, that's what does it. All I need is the one yes after 100 no's. All I need is the one yes. It's like a self-confidence thing. You have to say to yourself, you know, this will be the day, you know, or I will, you know, and if the day doesn't pan out the way I like, you say, I will try again tomorrow. You can't throw in the towel, you know, you just can't do that.
That was Stephanie Marudis interviewing some middle-aged people who had lost their job. I want to turn to you first, Paul. I was struck by that first woman, who lost her job, running out of money to pay for her medication. When we spoke to you earlier, you said that the unemployment situation is so long and so deep that people are losing their sense of well-being, and that's what it felt like as I listened to that woman, that she was losing or had the potential to lose her sense of well-being. What are the implications of that?
I think if you were to equate loss of a job with other losses in your life that are major, the loss of a loved one, the loss of your sense of personhood, the loss of anything dear and near to you, the loss of a child, anything that deals with grieving and mourning, this is what people are facing. So they go through some of the same cycles that we see with a person going through tremendous grief. And that includes the loss of the familiar. So that's usually the first thing, is things don't seem the same anymore. They don't feel the same. Their environment has changed. And then a loss of control, where they can't do the things they did before. They don't have the financial means, or they don't have the wherewithal to deal with those issues because of the emotional strain. The third one is a loss of security, where they wonder, will I ever find a job? Will I ever get my feet back on the ground? Will I ever feel secure as an individual and as a work employed? And then finally, loss of optimism. And that's the one we're most concerned about. Because when a person gets to that last stage where they've lost their sense of optimism, it's very hard for them to dig deep enough to find the energy and the enthusiasm and the ability when they get into an interview to not go back and talk about where they came from and what they've lost, but to talk about what they have and what they can give.
Just the opposite of that last gentleman that we heard, who clearly had his optimism.
Right. He hadn't lost his optimism, so he may have been through the other stuff.
I mean, the problem is, you know, I listen to you, Paul, and I think about one of my first patients I worked with. It was in a poverty area in Southwest Philadelphia. And she was depressed. And, you know, I was doing what a young psychotherapist would do, you know, talking to her about her life and her emotions. And she said, she said, you can't talk to me about my mind when my kids are hungry. She said, all I care about is feeding my kids, feeding myself. So, you know, I'm listening to these stages you're talking about, and of course they're real and they're devastating, but here's this woman we heard from. She could be hungry right around the corner. How does that get dealt with?
Well, I think there's been a shift in our understanding of how to deal with people when they're in trauma, when they're in high anxiety. And the shift has been from where they used to do what they call debriefings, where they would bring up the emotions and how do you feel about that and
which
how are
makes
you feeling
it worse. Now? Now we know makes it worse.
Pathologizes the issues. So what ends up happening is they feel worse, or they expect that they're supposed to feel that way. And this new realm of what they call psychological first aid is pretty exciting, because it's the idea of meeting the person where they are and trying to understand first what their needs are before assuming that you understand all that they're going through or what their needs are overall.
I want to give out our phone number again. We're talking about unemployment, so we'd love to hear from you if you are unemployed, if you fear being unemployed, if you're an employer and you fear being unemployed, or you're in a position of having to lay people off and you're living with distress on the workplace. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. We're here with Paul Rush, who's Director of Marketing, Contracts, and Business Development at the Penn Behavioral Health corporate services. You must have a pretty large business card with that.
I do. And my title goes on and on.
We're also here with Ron Hill, professor and senior associate dean at Villanova University School of Business. Ron, you were reacting. We heard that film clip by Stephanie Marutis of three middle-class people who were laid off from work. There was one in the middle who said she was 50 years old, and she sees this now as an opportunity. She's losing a lot of money, but now she wants to look for a job where she can, I forget her language, could skip to work, where she could finally be happy that she knows people who made big money and big stress came with big money. You reacted pretty strongly to that.
Well, I did because I'm turning 55, so maybe that resonated. But it also resonates with work I've done with managers who are middle-aged, who are wondering what are they leaving back to society. They've made the money. Their kids are growing up or have grown up. They have their homes, pretty much what it's going to become for them. Now they're looking for their legacy. And I think this woman was brilliant in her conversation because what she said to me was, I'm going to go out and now I'm going to find something. I'm going to release myself from all those boundaries, which is I got to make more money every year. If I don't, then I'm a failure. I've got to have more things over time. If I don't, I'm a failure. And I've watched people switch from senior executives in financial firms to high school teacher and absolutely love their new lives. Scale down, scale back. Maybe they've earned enough money where they have some of the things that they already going to need, but are now thinking about that next phase. And she said phase two was going to be different. It was going to be about her, and it was going to be about feeling good at what she does, which is a big signal that she didn't feel good about things previously, even if she was employed.
So you said that you could relate because you were similar ages. So are you telling us that you skip on your way to Villanova?
Well, I'll tell you honestly, I'm really fortunate. I absolutely love being a professor. I love teaching, I love working with our students, and I love doing the research I do. So I'm one of the fortunate ones, and my job allows me a lot of flexibility to dwell in a lot of places. But most senior executives, the higher up they go, we think that they have better lives, but they lose the moment-to-moment, day-to-day opportunities to determine their course because there are thousands of things available to them at all times.
You know, you just used a word that doesn't get used very often. I think it's critical, dwell. You know, we don't have time to dwell. I'm preparing a show in a couple of weeks based on a book entitled Simplicity Parenting. And kids, God, those kids don't have time to dwell. And that's where the brain gets developed. When we dwell, that's when the spirit, that's when creativity happens, when we dwell.
You know, you're absolutely right. And I find so many students today are groomed, which means they're building a resume to get to college, and they're building a resume in college to get to their jobs, but they're not thinking about the other side of things. What are their personal lives going to be like when they get older? What kinds of things do they want to do in their leisure time? They're so bent on the professional side, they forget about the personal.
Mm. excuse me. When this economy first went sour, they didn't know whether to call it a recession, a depression, and a lot of people were calling it a reset. And I don't know if you recall that language, but you know, it's time to reset our priorities, rethink what we do. And so it seems like in many respects we have hit bottom, and we don't know when we'll start to climb out, but we have hit bottom. I'm not seeing a reset, that we're just figuring out a way to go back to the way we always had done business. I wonder if that's your experience, Paul.
I think people in the past waited for their company to save them or to pull them out of whatever they were going through. And that's part of what you were relaying, was that the old experience was that your company took care of you, that they watched over you, that they made sure that you would advance and move forward. I think people today have to revitalize themselves. They have to reset themselves. They have to think of this as being a number of transferable skills to give them some gain in the face of those losses so that they can start to feel regenerated and revitalized.
And it's also hopefully to incorporate a bit of what we heard on the tape and what Ron said about thinking about what you want in your life, what's really important in your life, rather than just building something to get to the next level, whatever that might be. We're going to have to take a short break, and we'll be back in just 1 minute. We're talking about unemployment, the many dimensions of it, what it means for those who are unemployed, what the possibilities are, how to hold on to optimism in the face of what's really frightening. And we're talking about the impact of unemployment in the marketplace. We're going to talk more about that also after our break. My guests are Ron Hill. He's a professor and senior associate dean at Villanova School of Business. Paul Rush is director of marketing, contracts, and business development. He's at the Penn Behavioral Health Corporate Services. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. We'll be going to your calls right after our break. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY FM.
Drexel supports WHYY. If you are at least 20 pounds overweight, you may be eligible to participate in a research study called Project Well at Drexel University. This year-long weight loss study is funded by the National Institutes of Health and is designed to help adult participants lose weight and keep it off without medication. Guidance from weight loss specialists at group meetings is included. For more information, 215-762-1111. 215-762-1111.
It took a quartet from France to bring us some of the very best American-inspired pop music this year.
We are like a secret society in France of very few people that believe that pop music is one of the highest forms of human activity.
I'm Jim DeRogatis. Join me and Greg Cott as we welcome French Imports Phoenix this week on Sound Opinions.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
And we're back on Voices in the Family. We're talking about unemployment, the many dimensions of unemployment. My guests are Paul Rush, Director of Marketing, Contracts, and Business Development at Penn Behavioral Health Corporate Services. I'm also joined by Ron Hill. He's a professor and senior associate dean at Villanova University School of Business. Ron, I like you better. Your title is much simpler than Paul's.
I'm probably simpler than Paul as well.
nothing personal, Paul. I promised to go right to the phone, so let's do that first. We've got Ron on the line, different Ron. Ron, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm going to be unemployed at the end of the week. Friday will be my last day. I'm 55 years old. I am a skilled IT person, but there are no current prospects, and I have two kids getting ready to go to college, so yeah, I'm pretty nervous.
Any reaction?
I think your feelings are normal, and I think that, you know, identifying that that's what you're facing and what you're dealing with is probably the healthiest beginning of understanding that the process ahead of you will be difficult and preparing yourself for that. So I think a lot of people tend to be in denial and they don't want to face any of the details of what they have to face, but I think that the more aware you are of where you are now and what your needs will be going forward, the more healthy and the more able you'll be to deal with those issues as you face them.
Ron, when you called the show, do you know what you were looking for?
No, actually, I don't. I don't get to talk about it a lot, and it just felt good to actually just say it.
Is that what you were looking for, to be able to get it out of wherever
it
was inside?
I think so.
Why don't you talk about it? Do you know?
I don't know. I guess there's not a sense of shame, but what I do notice is that when people know you're in a difficult situation, they kind of tend to pull back. I don't know if that's out of a sense of helplessness or what, but that is the case.
You know, Ron, this is Ron Hill. I just want to just intervene just for a moment. You know, I'm 55. I'll be 55 in a month or two. I have a son at LaSalle. I have a son at Jefferson and Medical College. I know exactly what you're thinking, and I know how I feel when I've had to make big transitions, and part of me has always felt that I'm letting somebody down. Doesn't matter what the circumstances are, what caused it, and you just have to believe, you know, at some level you have to feel in your heart, you know, what goodness you have that supersedes any of this, and hold on to it. It's the only way I've ever survived through difficult transitions. Sorry, I'm not the psychologist, so I should probably get off.
No, I think that's great. And you know, what happens to you, to us, because it's happened to all of us in various shapes or forms, we find ourselves living in a world where we are not the person we thought we should be. And that's a source of anxiety. It is a source of shame, especially in the face of our peers. So it makes sense to me that you wouldn't open up. But it also makes sense to me, Ron, that what just happened to you just now, the fact that you did open up, feels better.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, I would encourage you to find kindred spirits and to be able to talk about it. And I would also suggest that, you know who you can trust, and you know who is close enough to you that can sit down with you and just listen. And I would encourage you to do that. It'll make you feel, help you feel less alone in the world.
Thank you, and thank you so much for your show. It's great.
I wish you the best, and thank you so much for your trust and calling in, Ron. Take care.
Okay.
Take care
Thank
of yourself. We also, by the way, want to hear how our younger listeners out there are feeling about unemployment. But in the meantime, we're going to hear from some people that our intern, Jonathan Glick, talked to when he visited local college campuses. Let's listen.
Well, I feel pretty good about it, actually, mainly because it's not something I have to worry about. I'm going to law school, so I'm probably just going to go directly there upon graduation. Though I would say the current job market is one of the reasons that I'm more inclined to go straight through as opposed to taking a couple of years off.
Pretty nervous about it. I have to say, though, that I'm pretty determined myself, and I think if people are active, they can definitely pursue opportunities that come their way and get a job in the end, but it's obviously nerve-wracking. Now, if I had graduated like 10 years ago, I would have been a lot more stable. I'm definitely showing my interest early on, so I'm taking part in a lot of college activities that are going to show my interest in whatever field I'm trying to pursue right now, just to distinguish myself from other people.
I would say, you know, a large number of friends are just out of work right now, and it's actually a little startling. It's a little depressing, too. But you can't really ignore it anymore.
I'm having a hard time getting motivated to find a job. Prospects are not good, so I kind of didn't expect to get my dream job. However, things are starting to look up because of like connections I made while I was at college. My professors really want to help me, so things are starting to look up. It's scary, but sometimes it feels really liberating not to have a job.
You and I, Ron, made eye contact when that young woman said that she was losing motivation. You nodded your head. What was your reaction?
Well, I it's really a combination, because the one person said, I may not be able to get my dream job. And I think that's what jobs are for people who have never really been in a professional environment. It's a dream. It's a fantasy. And they think it looks like this. It pays this amount. It gives them this kind of responsibilities. But when they see a major roadblock in the way, particularly if they have certain kinds of majors that don't look particularly marketable, it's almost easier for them to say, I kind of give up, because I'm forming myself in other ways during this period of time, and I'm not going to allow that to affect me. Now, Ron doesn't have that choice. Your earlier caller, he's much more fully formed, and part of his identity is tied into what professional experiences he has. If he doesn't have those, he's lost some sense of identity. I think some of these individuals are putting off creating that identity because they don't see the possibility there. I don't know which one's more dangerous or more difficult, but there's certainly different coping strategies.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Jonathan on the line. Jonathan?
Yes.
Hi, what can we do for you?
Well, I'm a 27-year-old, lost two jobs last year, and going back to college now to get my bachelor's degree and hopefully go to law school after that. I just wanted to bring up to you guys and see what you thought about special situations that people my age seem to be facing. I have friends that have bachelor's degrees and are working at call centers because they can't find any other jobs.
So how do they feel about it?
Well, they're not. They would rather work in the professions where they got their degrees, but they can't. I mean, they've been looking for years and years. I have one friend in particular who got a graphic design degree, but she's unable to find jobs in that field, so she's stuck working at this call center for going on a year and a half now.
Paul?
Well, I think sometimes everyone is feeling that they need to get into the career that their education has prepared them for. And I think in these times and in this environment right now, it might make sense for somebody to go into a call center temporarily and continue to hone their skills and work on those things.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, is going into a call center simply a holding pattern, a professional waste of time, or is there something to be gained, even in a call center?
And I guess my experience has been that those who are in call centers can gain other skills and actually find themselves in a call center to be very effective in dealing with people. And people skills are really what is becoming more prominent in the workplace today. The ability to talk and to work with others who are difficult or those who are in need of various different interventions and techniques.
Jonathan, excuse me. Let me turn back to you. You're 27 years old. Could you picture yourself 5 years from now? You've got a job. It's fairly stable as any jobs get. You look back at this stage of your life. Is there anything you've learned about yourself?
I would definitely say so, because I was working for about 6 years, and I did try the college before that, but ran out of money. And I guess what I would have learned about myself is that, you know, I'm resilient enough to go back and give it another shot and make sure that I get the type of job that would help me support a family, because that's one of my major goals, to support a family.
And you might not have known that 2 years ago, that you were resilient enough to overcome this level of adversity.
Absolutely. At that time, I was still, you know, trying to figure out a lot of things in my life.
Yeah. What a gift when we all figure out that we're resilient, you know, that's a kind of empowerment that you just can't get anywhere else other than adversity. Jonathan, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you very much for speaking with me.
Yeah, and best of luck. We have to take a short break. We're talking about unemployment with Paul Rush and Ron Hill. Ron Hill's a professor, senior associate dean at Villanova. Paul Rush is director of marketing, contracts, and business development at the Penn Behavioral Health Corporate Services. Our number is 888-477-9499. Give us a call if you are unemployed, if you are concerned about being unemployed, or if you're a young person and looking at the job market and feeling kind of hopeless and bewildered. Well, we'll be back in just one short minute. I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY FM.
Independence Blue Cross is proud to support WHYY. Headquartered in Philadelphia, Independence Blue Cross is dedicated to the health and well-being of nearly 3 million people throughout the Delaware Valley. Independence Blue Cross now offers individual health insurance plans, including preventative care, emergency care, and prescription drug coverage. Further details available online at ibx4u.com. Independence Blue Cross, here for you every step of the way.
On the next Fresh Air, psychiatrist Julie Holland on treating patients in Bellevue Hospital's ER in New York.
Pretty much the hardest thing you have to do in a psych ER is figure out why they're psychotic. Are they manic? Are they schizophrenic? Are they high? You know, if somebody's been doing cocaine or methamphetamine for days on end, they can look psychotic.
Holland talks about her new memoir on the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Thank you.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about unemployment and the many, many dimensions of it with Paul Rush. He's Director of Marketing, Contracts, and Business Development at Penn Behavioral Health Corporate Services. Ron Hill is also here with us. He's a professor and senior associate dean at Villanova University School of Business. Let's go right back to the phones because they are all lit up. We've got Dave on the line. Dave, hi, you're on Voices.
Thank you. I was laid off in November, and I wanted to speak about the roller coaster, the trajectory of emotions. Initially, I had an optimism, sure, I'll go right back out, and I have a lot to offer. And then that faded to a kind of humility, and then discouragement and isolation. Raises issues of worth versus earning power. And then I gained weight, and then I had a good dress suit to wear at interviews, and I didn't fit in it, you know, because of the extra weight. And so I'm working again now, but as a contract employee, and it ends up being a different situation, a different relationship that with an employer than I'd had previously.
Before I turn to our experts, I've got a strange question for you. How are you?
Up and down.
How about today?
Hanging in. You know, a lot of it is feeling isolated still and not having support at home and that sort of thing.
What's happening at home?
Nothing. Separate story. I'd really rather not say, but the unemployment gets into it, and I hear it in my voice, which I didn't expect to have come through.
Yeah, of course. And you know, Dave, we heard from another caller earlier, and that was the issue for him, too. I mean, it was the sense of isolation. It was a different theme, but it's that sense of isolation that... I don't know the emotions that go with that for you, Dave, if it's shame or guilt or whatever it is, but boy, it's the kind of emotions where you're not about to open your heart to the world.
Yeah, it is shame. I think it gets it's shame that gets put back while you have a role to play. Once you don't have a role to play that gives you something to turn to every day at work, then you're stuck and you think, oh, I don't have anything to offer.
You know, the other caller spoke about talking and trying to talk themselves through some of the issues, talking with their family, talking with a professional. You know, people wonder, what is the value of talking? Why does talking help you through these roller coaster rides? And the answer is that oftentimes the normal progression is from the emotions to the cognitions, where you get caught up in the thoughts, and then you get all kinds of symptoms that occur, and hard to get some resolution, hard to get some end result for something this nebulous and this difficult to deal with. And so talking sometimes is the ability for someone to hear you and to help you to frame and formulate what you need to do, what's unique for you, and what will help you in that situation overall. And I think that's the key, is that the more talking you do, even though it's painful and even though it may not seem like it's helping, the more it helps you to start moving forward and making better decisions towards that resolution, whatever that may mean for you.
And feel less alone. I want to turn to you, Ron. During our break, you were talking about success, and it strikes me because Dave just used language that was the opposite. You know, who am I? I'm not working. What value do I have? I'm not working. What's your definition of success? What do you tell your students?
Well, thank you. I had a conversation with my students last week that was exactly on this topic, and it said that they measure their value in society by continuing to build. All the good things that happen to them resonate and become part of the development of the self. But really, you don't know who you are until you face adversity. And I was telling them that character is built not on accepting success, but on dealing with failure and coming out of it. And one of the things I like to tell this caller, and I would tell Ron, not being a psychologist, but being a business professor, I would take charge. I think it's the feeling that you are out of control and out of control of the situation. So I would tell Ron, if I had a week left, I'd go up the food chain as far as I could, saying, I've been a good employee. You owe me more than you're giving me as severance. You need to do better by me. It may not even result in something, but at least he's taking charge. And I tell this listener, If you can, find something to get you out. If there's an area that you've always wanted to work in but can't get in there, do it for free. Go and do an internship. Do something else that gets you in there, and then find some other more flexible way to earn the income that you need. Maybe it's outside your comfort zone, but you're, again, taking charge of your life.
Dave, I do hope that was helpful, and I appreciate the call and wish you the best. I want to talk to both you guys about the work environment, and I'll turn to you first, Paul. The anxiety that's in there with employees has to affect performance, has to affect the culture of the work environment. You know, in the old days, you're on a job and you're not performing well. You're not performing well because you don't like the job. You move on. And here, I guess you can't move on if you're not happy with the job.
And I think that's a big struggle within organizations today, is how do you notify those that you're going to lay off and move forward, and how do you retain the motivation of those who remain behind? And in many ways, the guilt complex is not as strong as it used to be, where people felt guilty as survivors and worried about those who didn't make it and didn't come forward. It's more of a fear of how much work do I have to now do to take the place of those who have been let go, and how do I continue to perform and move forward? So I think it's tricky. I think managers have to be very aware of how they present the whole process, and also how they motivate those who are remaining to really succeed and to gain that sense of well-being within the workplace itself, because I think that's where you lose some of that.
How do you do that? How do you gain a sense of well-being in today's workplace?
Well, I think what Ron was saying earlier, which is the fostering the resilience, helping the group to pull together, helping them to support one another, being patient with those who are still going through the emotions of what they've been through, helping individuals to really find short-term gains, because sometimes when they lose that control or that sense of security, they're looking too far down the road and saying, what's going to be my career and where am I going from here? Giving them short gains so that they can succeed and feel good and feel motivated at work to get things done.
One day at a time is what it sounds like.
It really is.
You know, think about today and doing something today that gives you a sense of self-esteem. I want to talk about this family metaphor that's used at the workplace. You know, we are family. People come to the workplace expecting a sense of family. Now, I'm a family therapist, and one thing I know is that in real families, people would like to fire each other, but are never quite able to. So I don't think the metaphor really works.
Well, it's an excellent example of my own life. I grew up with, my father was an alcoholic, and he would say he loved me regularly, but didn't show it in ways that were meaningful. And I think corporate environments mirror some of that as well. A lot of managers say, we're going to keep you on, we're going to do everything we can, and then behind the scenes, they know things are going to happen. What I tell senior managers, and I've been able to talk to them all over the country in the last 2 years, I say, inoculate your very best people. Let them know, pull them aside, take them aside and say to them, we're going to do everything we can to keep you. There are going to be layoffs, but it's not going to involve you. Secondly, inoculate everybody. Tell them the worst that's going to happen so they can prepare themselves for that. The problem is often we don't trust those above us to be telling us the truth of what's happening. Once they do, and once we believe that they're telling us the truth in our best interest, there is a certain amount of relaxing that can go on. And I always tell people when they've asked me, because it's that difficult conversation, as you well know, when you've got to let somebody go. So they'll ask me, how do I let somebody go? I say, think how you would like them to let your mother go. How would you like them to treat that person? When you do that, you bring a whole different humanity to the conversation.
That's interesting. You know, when you talk about inoculate people who are not going to get laid off, I just gave a lecture to middle and senior management of an employer who was pretty secure in this. The economy hadn't touched them, and layoffs were not going to happen here. The big change in this company was that he always had job openings, so he was always hiring, and they're not doing that now. But everybody was secure. Everybody was inoculated, and the anxiety was there anyway, and it wasn't irrational because so many of those employees had spouses and family members that were losing their job, and you know, it was crushing the family economics, and it was affecting their performance on the job. How do you deal with that? Let me turn to you, Ron.
Well, you've posed a very, very difficult situation. That is a flipping of the corporate culture, and that's the issue. When the corporate culture goes from a stable and secure environment to one where there's great uncertainty, now managers who got to know people who worked hard to create important relationships to keep them there, that did everything they could to try to make them interested in staying for as long as they can, now have to break that bond. But it's not best broken by leaving it unsaid. It's best broken by saying the culture has changed. We still care about you, but we can't care about you in the same financial way we did before. But we're going to demonstrate our care by doing some things. One, we're going to keep you as long as we can. Two, if we have to let you go, we're going to give you an unqualified letter of support. Three, if they have the resources, we're going to help you find ways to retool or to relocate or whatever else you need in order to get a job. Just imagine feelings you would have towards an employer that went out of their way to help you stay secure, even when you're not with them.
So, Paulette, at some level, what Ron's proposing does sound like family.
And in a perfect world, I would agree with Ron, but in reality, a lot of those promises they can't make, and it's hard for that balance when a manager, you know, is thinking of their employees as their family. Ron, you mentioned, you know, when you're laying off, think of your mother, how you would do this with your mother. We don't go there at all. We encourage them not at that moment to be thinking of them as family and not at that moment to be trying to coddle them through the process, because in reality, it is a truth, and it's hard for most people to bear. But we find managers sometimes will pad it or make excuses, or they'll make promises they can't keep, or they'll try and help them beyond what they really can or what they really should. And I guess part of that needs to break from the family dimension into more of what is a colleague and what is business.
I remember years ago when I was an employee, I was running a drug treatment program. And the first time I had to fire an employee, guy I was really fond of, we about three quarters through the interview, I was crying, and he was reassuring me that he would be okay. This is the good scenario here. It should be the opposite.
We rehearse with the managers prior to notification so that they know what they're going to say and so that they're able to deal with the emotions of the employees. We hear a lot of employees say, it's not fair. And we encourage them to say, I'm sorry, you know, that you're going through this. I'm sorry that you feel that way and that you're going through these emotions. Not to validate whether it's fair or not, or not to debate with them over the fairness, but just to validate them as a human being.
Validate the suffering.
And I do think that what happens in some cases is they become other. You know, you begin to distance yourself from them. You do it. It's implicit in the workplace. People feel it and they see it. And I think it loses its humanity. I don't think we should ever overpromise what we can deliver to somebody, but we don't want to turn them into other either.
And you can feel it whether you're getting laid off or not.
Right.
An employee can feel whether they're other in any workplace, in any environment, regardless of the economy. Let's see if we can get another call on. We've got Claire on the line. Claire, hi, you're on Voices.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thanks.
My mom called me actually to listen to the segment, and I'm that younger unemployed representative that you guys are looking for.
And what's happening in your life?
I've been unemployed for about a month and a half, and I specifically just wanted to respond to that segment that you had where you were interviewing college campus people and how they said that if you're active, everything will work. And I feel like I've been active. I've been networking. I literally just flew across the country for a part-time opportunity. I feel like I'm putting myself out there, but it's if this were happening, I don't know, a couple of years ago, and I wouldn't have to go through this. Like, I wouldn't have to fly across the country for a part-time job. And it's just been, like, a very eye-opening experience, and what I want and what I need is definitely, it's just been hard, I guess. Like, what I want to do is not even, like, an opportunity anymore. Like, I have to make money. So,
Ron, what's your reaction to Claire? And Claire, thanks so much for your call.
Well, I think you have to decide what your career values are. What do you really want to accomplish in your career? And think about it in a longer term. But almost anything that you want to do, there's going to be someone out there who's going to need somebody, maybe not even a paid individual. But if you can find some way to make money and continue to build this skill set, you will eventually get there. It's always putting your eyes on that end game. I know it's frustrating now, but you're a young person. You've got many, many years to be in this career. So decide what you want. Be proactive with companies that are doing that. And then find ways to make enough money to survive until you can get your way in.
It is frustrating, and it's unfair, and it's anger-provoking, but I guess the task is not to let those emotions be driving the car. You know, you have to drive the car and not the emotions. And, you know, you're right. You will get there. And unfortunately, we have gotten there, and we're out of time. I wish we had more time. I want to thank you both so much for joining us. We've been talking about unemployment with Paul Rush. He's the Director of Marketing, Contracts, and Business Development at Penn Behavioral Health Corporate Services, and Ron Hill, a Professor and Senior Associate Dean at Villanova's Business School. Next week on Voices in the Family, we will be talking about superheroes, the fact that we have had them through time and memoriam, and what they mean in our lives, why we create them, how we use them. Tomorrow, join me at philly.com/askdan for my live web chat. We're going to be talking about caretaking and codependency. Well, if you've got a question, show idea, you can reach us at voices@whyy.org, and you can reach me at drdangottlieb.com. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Al Banks. Elizabeth Perez Luna is the executive producer of audio content. Mike and Scott's our executive producer. Stephanie Marut has produced today's show. Elisa Walters is our associate producer. Our intern is Jonathan Glick. Una Kwan is our volunteer. I'm Dan Gottlieb. Enjoy your week, my friends. Go Phillies.
You've been enjoying.